The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor,
and your drinking JC.
All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty!
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Warner, did you want me to do it?
Nope, JC just did
it. JC did it, hooray.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Footy Prime the Podcast. It's me, James Sharman, Amy Dubs Balls. Combine.
Ew.
That's all I got.
They don't always work, do they?
You mean the Sharman Walsh hybrid? Yeah, they never work.
I don't know what that means.
No, I don't know what that means either, but that's where my brain went after JC's intro.
It's a lion. How is everybody? Combination.
Yeah, it's Footy Prime. James Sharman not here. That was JC. He's also here. Wonger's here. Craig Forrest is here, and Jimmy Brennan's here. Cleanly shaven. I don't know if he's clean. I don't know. Again, don't know what my brain was doing there. But Jimmy, you shaved your beard off. What's going on?
I felt like I needed a trim. And you know, sometimes when you have a beard for so long, and then it starts kind of getting agitated and a little bit itchy, and I was like, you know what, clean shave. And then I took it off, and then I looked, and I was like, I look like a little baby.
You look like what?
A little baby, a wee baby.
You do look like a wee baby.
So I need to get my beard back.
How long will it take?
I don't know, a few days, it's back.
3 weeks.
Will you have a bite tomorrow, please tell us? I'm just kidding.
A couple of days, it'll be back. But it's nice to have a clean shave.
Mm-hmm.
Right, get some moisturizer on your cheeks.
Yeah, do all the skincare now before the hair grows back, right?
Yes, I'm doing it all now, all the scrubs and everything.
That's right. Well, it's good to see everybody. How are you guys doing? Because like Montreal, this is kind of typical weather for us, end of January, where it was minus 30, whatever, over the course of the weekend, lots of snow. But you guys have been absolutely hammered with snow. How's everybody doing? You being safe when you're shoveling? Because you guys are getting to that age. Take breaks, okay?
Don't.
It's true.
Nobody should be shoveling over 50.
I think shoveling is overrated.
The snow was light, too.
Yeah.
Yes, broom is where it's at. So I groomed 2 feet-ish of snow and no issue. Broom. Early.
Good. Maybe that's the way to go then. Well, since you guys are so chatty, let's go straight to the football, shall we? My God, I'm so happy I'm hosting today. So listen, there's lots of things that we can dive into, but I thought the first thing we would get to is Mexican coach Javier Aguirre basically let the cat out of the bag, or again, the cat being Marcelo Flores, saying that he's committed to Canada. So this is yet to be confirmed, I think, from Canada's camp. But Matthew Schinetti from TSN had a tweet saying that multiple sources confirmed that the 22-year-old has decided to make the switch, filing his one-time FIFA switch because he's previously suited up for Mexico. And this would mean that he was meant to be called into Camp Poutin, didn't make it because that was during Liga MX play, and he's sort of found his feet there, scoring some goals. But Jimmy... Yep. Likely to be called in now to this March international window and camp for these upcoming games. I think, is it Tunisia and Iceland that are booked for that window? Yep. So one about Flores, he's going to still have to fight for his spot, not only in an 11, but just on that roster as you project ahead to the World Cup. And then end of your thoughts on the upcoming opponents. And what do you think about of those as prep matches for Canada?
Well, one, I think it's good that, you know, Flores is going to play for Canada. There's no doubt he's a talented player. For a player to be playing for one of the biggest clubs in Mexico, Tigres, you know, scoring, being creative as he is, and getting the minutes that he deserves, for him to be in the Canadian squad now, I think it's fantastic. You know, we keep talking about, you know, the dual citizens and having depth within the Canadian Soccer Association. It's just getting bigger and bigger, isn't it, our player pool now. And to have a young, talented player like him committing to Canada is, I think it's brilliant. I really do. And he's probably looking at it thinking, you know, this Canadian squad, the way it's going, the way that Canada soccer is developing now and pushing forward, I think we're starting to create noise around the world a little bit with the players and talent that we have. And he wants to be a part of what Jesse Marsh and the rest of the organization is putting together. So for me to have a young, talented player like him be involved, I think it's brilliant. I really do. And I'm excited to see him play with this national team. Where he fits in, I don't know. That's going to be the difficult part. But I'm sure with the two games that are coming up, there will be a role for him. But, yeah, it's not going to be easy for him as well because, I mean, with the likes of, Kone, Estecchio, and like our midfielders that we have right now, I think we've got very good, talented players. But, again, it's always good to have those players that maybe come off the bench as well, such as a Flores, that can make a difference. So, look, it's going to be interesting to see where exactly he fits in with his squad. And, again, you know, the more games that we have with this – with the national team leading up to the World Cup, it's only going to be beneficial for the squad and Jesse Marsh. I think we're in a good place, very good place with this organization at the moment.
I wonder if it was news to him about not being part of the Mexican setup anymore. Yeah. He could find himself in limbo because, I mean, if it doesn't stick with Canada, then you know, Mexico clearly aren't interested because if they are, and if he's Hugo Sanchez, he's playing for Mexico. Hmm. Bottom line.
Yeah, that's interesting. But I think when you look at the prospect, the type of profile that he is, I think he's highly coveted by Jesse Marsh and Canada. And to Jimmy's point about the depth in the midfield position for us, I think he fulfills a need and he's a type of player that we don't necessarily have right now who's competing for that roster for the World Cup.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, he's creative and historically creative players in Canada have been hard to come by.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a bad thing for us. And I think he's still got an upside to him and he's improving as he gets older. So yeah, it could be a good thing for us, but there's... yeah, no guarantees.
It's nice, too, that Craig threw some cold water on it right away.
I know.
Glass half full. Hey, we might have a player. We might not.
I know how this stuff works.
Yeah, but there was some hate, some vitriol being thrown his way, and particularly his father and the way that people felt, fans felt, that he was trying to leverage a potential move to Canada to increase his standing with Mexico. Is kind of that the same feeling that you're talking about for us when you mentioned him being in limbo? He's not necessarily mudslinging towards his family in the way that they're maybe trying to manipulate the situation. But what do you mean exactly when you say he might find himself in limbo if he does file his one-time switch with FIFA?
Well, just the fact that if he doesn't work for Canada and he's not in the plans of whoever the manager is, and he's already made that switch, then, you know, the Mexico dream for him is over. And like many football players, you end up sitting there wondering where you go and not getting picked by either country, potentially.
Mm-hmm. It seemed like in the quote and hearing Aguirre talk about it, there seemed to be a level-headedness about it. That he was like, let's respect the decision that's been made. And it was refreshing to me to hear that from the Mexican head coach to say, like, even if he was maybe wanted, if they looked at the prospect, the potential of this young man, that he's made the decision to go play for Canada and that fans or the media should let that be because he's clearly made his choice. So I thought that was good to hear. What do you think, Forrest, about the opponents? I think Tunisia, despite the fact that they struggled in AFCON, I think that's the type of opponent that Canada needs. But in terms of a European opponent, Iceland, I think they're ranked 74th in the world. Maybe everybody was hoping for a slightly better European opponent.
I don't know. I think Iceland's a good opponent. They've proved over years that they've competed very well. They produce really good players for the size of the country. Hopefully they get the right one. And if you're Donald Trump, it might be Greenland that they play.
Yeah, we maybe leave that one alone.
It's a different profile. African countries, a different profile, North African. So like it's both of them are good. And this is what we need to produce in a certain characters of players that we're going to play against. I think it's a good mixture.
Yeah, these two matches are going to be at BMO Field at the end of March, March 28th and 31st, respectively.
Winter.
Like, this snow might still be there. Get your shovels out.
Exactly.
Will be.
Yeah, groundskeeping staff. What do you think, Jimmy, about these tests for Canada as you're looking forward to the World Cup? Are these the types of opponents that are required?
Look, I think it's just games. You don't care who you're really playing against right now. Yeah, you're playing against a North African and you get the European team. But like I said before, the more games you can get with the squad playing together, the better it's going to be. Are they going to be easy tests? No, they're never going to be easy. I mean, Iceland's decent. Tunisia's got some very good players as well. But it's what's needed. It's what's needed before going into a World Cup is matches. So, look, you're going to get good quality games. I mean, would you love to be playing one of the top teams in Europe before going in? Yeah, probably. You know, a good test, but I think these are going to be fine. I think they're good. This is where I think Jesse will be working more on his tactics, fine-tuning the squad before going into the World Cup. This will be his last opportunity. So, yeah, it's fine.
Do you think that the roster that's named for this March window is very much going to be, aside from maybe a couple of players because of the injuries to some long-standing stalwarts on this team, that is basically going to be the World Cup squad?
I think it'd be close. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think we all know, I think we can all name probably 18, 20 players that we think will be there.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I think then it's going to be, like, again, fine-tuning, just trying to get the right mix of players that they're going to be that the later part of the squad. But I think for the most part, yeah, I think you're zoning in right now to who he believes is going to be a part of this team.
Yeah, exactly. Zoning in. Yeah, at this point. Time's a ticking.
Mm-hmm.
I always wonder, too, if, you know, you go with some lower-ranked teams, you get into a winning space. If that is actually as important to playing these top level teams where you might lose 2-0 and go, oh, this was, you know, you might have two back to back where you're shut out 4-0 by a France or a, you know, one of these bigger European teams, that doesn't put you a step back heading into a tournament.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. Yeah, I would agree that that would be potentially what could happen. I think that we could look back to where before the 94 World Cup when we played a whole string of games against Germany and Holland and Brazil, Spain, Morocco. Mm-hmm. I think we're probably in that category where they're probably like, yeah, it's a good test. They were in the same.
Oh, you were you were the testing team.
We were the test.
Guinea pigs.
Yeah. Why don't you score 19 goals on us?
Exactly. But then when Brazil, we drew with Brazil, then there was the knives were out on that. Like, they've got to change this. The team's got to be changed. The manager's got to be kicked out and all that. And a month later, they won the World Cup. So,
yeah, there's a certain amount of risk involved, I guess. I think from Canada's perspective, though, you're just trying to book meaningful opponents. And then after that, if there's any tinkering to be had or that you have to make in terms of who you're throwing out there for your starting 11, what you're focusing on in terms of your prep, like Jimmy's saying, whether you're zoning in or zeroing in, I might say zeroing in on who like your starting 11 would be. I mean, this is when you're tinkering. This is when you have time to do it, right? And then I think your mentality, if it's so fragile that you can't stand to lose 2-0, then I think you've got bigger problems, right? I think you have the luxury of time. Yes, you're getting down to the wire, but it's a March window. I think rumors are Turkey, I think, for the June preparatory match prior to the World Cup. I think that's also an interesting opponent. Again, maybe fans are hoping for a little bit more, but I don't think really we'll look back if Canada's able to have a successful World Cup and say, listen, we should have played – should have played Spain, or we should have played Norway, or we, you know, we should have played some different opponents. Like, nobody's going to be splitting hairs at that point. Jesse Marsh will be able to do what he needs to do to prepare the squad adequately, and prepare them for success, no matter who the opponents are.
Okay, we have to quote Dubs right now, right? We have to say, hey, because if it goes the other way, they'll say, look at that March window. We played such soft teams.
No, but look, to be honest, the results do not matter coming into these last matches, right? It doesn't matter if they win, they lose, big deal. It means nothing, because what's happened now, it's all about, you know, there's going to be objectives that they've put together and that need to be met, right? They're going to have principles that they're going to say, okay, this is what we're focusing on. The sub-principles going into proper details of what their objective is and how they're going to get there. So they're focusing on certain areas of the pitch, you know, the closing down. If we win it here, how do we get there? There's certain things that they're looking at now. And like I said, it's all fine-tuning. If they lose 2-0 against Iceland, they don't care. But if they're meeting their objective and their principles in that match, where everybody is on page, because they need everybody to understand what they're going to be doing at this World Cup. So for me, it's not about the result. It's just focusing in on how we're going to play and what we're going to do in possession, out of possession, low block, high block, whatever it may be that they're focusing on. That is where this is the last chance of really going to have at a high level match to fine tune things.
Yeah, I would agree with that too. And then just their whole, you hope that what you do in a match is a result, you know, that those type of things, you know, reflect in the result by what you do on the field. But if it doesn't, it's not imperative, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is where the preparation and the process is more important than the outcome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, in an ideal world, you would love to have Jesse Marsh have this team for the next 3-4 months, like just in camp all the time, playing games. But you can't, you know, there's only a certain amount of time they have to put these teams together. And it's the same for everybody, but it's not always easy.
Mm-hmm. I am trying to decide whether Jimmy has more or less credibility. Fresh, like cleanly shaven.
I know. Mm-hmm.
I think it might be more.
I think so too, especially when he started hand talking, because his first, the first questions you asked him, he had his arms crossed. He was a little, then all of a sudden he got into it and you saw it. You saw the real Jimmy.
In case you haven't noticed, I'm all fucking business today.
Except you're not wearing pants.
That's why I can't.
Or unders.
Business on top, party on the bottom.
Party time down here. Which way's north?
I don't want to see where you're pointing. But the good thing about Jesse Marsh not having this team, as you mentioned for us, for an extended period of time, is you have players who are rounding into form at club. And one of those players who is critical to how Canada ticks along and to their success is Jonathan David. I don't think we ever wavered in our, I think, commitment or confidence that he would turn the page, that he would, you know, slowly get his feet underneath him in Serie A and get his scoring boots on, because we know we had it in him. But I mean, he's finally doing it now. I think combined with Weston McKennie in Champions League, scored again, split the defense, great ball, chested down, found the back of the net again. So, Jimmy, I think this is not a surprise to us, but it's great to see for Jonathan David, who needs to be Canada's talisman at the World Cup.
Look, I love it. I mean, there was a lot of critics out there that were hammering, and all of us believed in the process. We knew that he was going to come good at some point. How difficult it was for him leaving Ligue 1 and going to Serie A. And it does take time. It takes time to settle in. In Italy, it's very tactical. They defend very, very well, which means that now he's got to be a little bit more creative to get his opportunities. And we saw what it meant. So, you know, the last month when we got that goal, and the whole team, the subs, and everybody was coming over celebrating with him, because they know he's a good player. They know he's a good guy. And it takes time. And I think now we're starting to see the best of Jonathan David. He's settling in, scoring goals. He's confident now. His teammates support him. He's in a good place right now, and it's great to see. And we we're always believers of him, by the way. Let's just get that out there. Become good.
Yeah, yeah, we have been. And when he made the move to France, it took him a while. There was several months there at the off the top that it wasn't going particularly well for him. And then he found his feet. And I think that's what's happening in Italy too. And Jimmy makes a very good point. The defenders are better in Italy. The defense in that league is a step up again from the French league to where he is. Certainly for a striker, it's very, very difficult. And you have to take your chances. And it's good to see that he scored. And when he came off after the game on the weekend, he got a really good reception. So it was. And the players love him. You can see that they absolutely adore him. Yeah.
I stole a quote, Dubs, from one soccer who stole a quote from at Ilbien One Rocom. And this is Jonathan David. I'm settling in at Juve. Football here is very different from French football. It's like changing schools. You have to get to know your teammates. Even at Lille, I struggled at first. I scored 3 goals in the first 6 months, more or less the same as here. But by the end of the year, however, it became 13. And the following season, I scored more than 20. So he actually talks about, I didn't live up to expectations. I have to be patient. And as Craig and Jimmy have told us, you don't always have that time to settle in before the knives come out. And I'm always wondering, for your 3 professional careers, that transition, is this a normal transition? You see it, especially for a striker? Craig, Jimmy?
A lot of the time you do. Yeah. It doesn't just click automatically. It makes a very good point about changing schools, knowing your schoolmates and your teammates and how they play and the league and the defending. And yeah, it's just the nuances are different for sure.
Yeah. It is. I mean, you've got to think as well. When he was at Lille, you know, he's used to his wide players. He's used to his attacking midfielder, you know, their patterns of play, his movements. You know, the players know exactly where he's going to go. So I could whip the ball in the box because I know what his habits are. You know, he peels off the defender and he comes near posts in certain times and I can whip it into that area. He's going to get there. So now he's going to, well, now he's, when he went to Juve, those runs and those movements that he'd be doing, those wide players and the attacking midfielders and central midfielders, they have to pick up his movements and pattern, start to understand what he's all about. And it does take time for everybody to kind of connect and understand everybody's movements. It takes time. 100% it does.
That was a great result for them, though, against Napoli.
And for Spalletti against Conte as well, right?
Right.
Have that over him. So that's great. But I think with Jonathan David, what impresses me most about him is his maturity and his unwavering belief in himself.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's great to know that is always there. That's foundational to him as a person, but as a footballer. And to Jimmy's point about the developing partnerships, you imagine the backing that he has from his manager, but then also how well-liked he seems to be from his teammates. That's followed him wherever he's been in the world, whatever club he's been at. We don't see what's happening at training. Right. Like though that little spark, those things that are emerging in terms of the partnerships, those are being developed day in and day out. So the players believe in it. It just doesn't always translate instantaneously to the pitch and in the way of results and filling the net. So you see like the way that everybody celebrated, you know, a number of weeks ago, like all of the substitutes and everybody kind of swarmed them. I mean, I think that was great to see. It was almost relief from a Canadian fan's perspective because like, okay, like he's going to be all right. And then the goal productions and the contributions have followed, which is, I think, unsurprising, but it's so great to see him sort of validated that way, not only by his teammates, but then also on a score sheet, which is absolutely what Canada needs. And then if we switch gears a little bit, and I wanted to ask you guys this earlier about, I asked Jimmy about the March window and the roster that we expect to see. I think it will very much reflect who's going to be named to that 26 player roster for the World Cup. But Kyle Larin, who is on loan at Feyenoord, looking for a move because as you guys both know, before a World Cup, you need to have that club form. He needs to go somewhere where he's playing regularly. Is he a guy who is already, if you're projecting forward, might be on the outside looking in? If he doesn't get a move where he can play regularly, is Kyle Larin maybe going to be left off this roster for the World Cup?
Potentially. Yeah. He's in limbo. He needs to get a club.
That's the word of the day.
Craig, I was going to say.
The password is limbo.
Now you're just making me think of Kristen Wiig.
Oh my God. She's my favorite. One of the best hits ever.
Yeah. So he needs a club and he needs to start scoring goals because he's got lots of competition up front there. Lots.
And I think that's what makes the difference, because somebody else who's in a similar situation is Stefan Eustachio, also rumored to be going somewhere for in the months that lead up to the World Cup, but very different situations in terms of their standing and I think their importance to Canada's success at the World Cup. What do you think, Jimmy?
Yeah, I mean, going back to Kyle Larin, I think you end up taking it, don't you? He's an experienced guy to score goals. I mean, what's the competition up top? Aloisie, Thomas David, he's scoring goals, but we know that he's not. Mm-hmm. You know, does Jesse Marsh love him? Is Jesse Marsh going to start him? You know, but who else can score goals in that number nine position? We know that Kyle Larin can score international football at an international level. And he's experienced. He's a level-headed guy. I think there could be a spot for him, because I think maybe there might be a match in a certain period of the game where you need someone like Kyle Larin to come off the bench.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good point too. Maybe it's more the fact that, you know, is from a starting position, I think he'd be part of the squad, I suppose. But he's got to be worried though, because he needs to get some minutes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Theo Bear scored another goal. Over the course of the weekend, Jason Russell Rowe, who is rumored to be making a move himself, interest from Europe, from Columbus Crew, he looked great against Guatemala. So, I mean, there's this camp poutine. Yes, it's about development. It's about the next cycle and including more players, giving them a sniff of that national team environment. But he's somebody who was a standout performer, from just a week ago. So does he maybe get included into that March window? And there, I mean, listen, there's increased competition at the striker role, but also just to be a part of this roster. And I think that just bodes well for Canada's success. We're at a point now where like there's all kinds of players who could not only be starting, but who could be named to that roster.
Well, look, you make a good point. I think with Russell Rowe, Jesse Marsh likes him kind of in that Jonathan David position, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And he can play. We saw that he can do that job. So I think Jesse would be looking at that thinking, you know, if Jonathan David goes down, who else do we have that can play in that role? That's Russell Rowe. So Russell Rowe must be in a good spot right now thinking, hey, you know what, I've showcased well and maybe I'm getting into this squad right now because I could be that guy. If something happens to Jonathan David and he needs to come off, then I could be the guy that comes in there and plays that position, because I don't, there's not many guys that can play that position.
Mm-hmm. I think that's when you put your coaching hat on and you look at the depth at each of these positions. And we've talked about the utilitarian role and players who are highly versatile. And that's maybe the type of player that Jesse Marsh is looking at, is not only the leadership qualities, where I think that's where Larin has the edge, is not only what he can provide, what he's done historically for Canada, but that he's an important leader, that he's been a key cog of this national team for a really long time. And he has the confidence of Jesse Marsh, but maybe somebody like a Jason Russell Rowe, as you mentioned, Jimmy, can anybody else really fill in and play the role of a John David on this team? I don't know if we've seen anybody do that successfully. Like, he's played almost every single minute under Jesse Marsh. So you have to allow for that. You have to plan for that as the national team coach. I mean, we look at the depth that this team has, not only at that number nine position, but in the wingers, like Liam Miller's doing very well. Ali Ahmed, guys, we have to give mention again.
Flowers.
Yes, with how well he's doing. And we talked about, the two of you did, with your experience playing over in England and in Europe, that you thought it was a really great move for him. And he scored again, combined with the same player. He provided an assist, I think, in his first start. And then the next match gets on a score sheet with an absolute banger. So things are looking up for and looking bright for Ali Ahmed, not only at his club at Norwich, but then what it means for him as he comes back to Canada in March.
Yeah, he's been brilliant right out of the gate. They got a big match against Coventry today.
Okay.
Yeah, they're home against the league leaders. So a real test for them. But they're heading in the right direction, and they've picked up some good results, and I think they're out of the relegation zone. I'll have to check that, but they're down there. They're still fighting, but it's looking good.
Yeah, like it hasn't just been Ali that's been the spark for him, but he's been very good. But the team under Philip Clement has certainly looked good, and the results have proven that as well, as they climb out of the basement and out of that relegation zone, as you mentioned. But great to see for Ali. Where do we want to go next, Warner?
Oh, I was just thinking, I wanted to ask Jimmy and Craig a question, and you, Dubs, just about the profile. Jason Russell Rowe had that great window against Guatemala. I mean, he played really well, and he got noticed. And I'm just wondering, you know, Kone had Copa. There's all these opportunities now with international soccer to get noticed for Canadian players. And I was just thinking how important that is compared to how it used to be. And because this is actually a great thing for development, not only in Canada, but North America, where these players are getting to be seen against South Americans, Europeans. How important is that for a professional, your professional development, where you're going to be seen in the spotlight and to be able to move up and move on, like an Ali did with Vancouver?
Yeah, I think the Canadian program is getting attention. And I think part of the reason, too, is that you look at the fees that they're going for, they're not 40, 50, 60 million. Like, they picked up Ali for what, a million plus? Like, you know, that's good value. So I think they're getting good value with Canadian players right now. And that will change, but I think at the moment, that's
again, we've always been good value Canadians, haven't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we are. We're good value. We'll give everything.
Mm-hmm.
More than just a loony or a toonie.
Yeah.
Yeah. another important piece, I think, or part of this roster and the way that things are developing are injured players. When you're thinking about the men's national team, and that almost the entirety of that back line was injured at some point. And that's certainly, like, them getting back to full fitness is going to be something we have to definitely keep our eye on. So it was great to see Alfonso Davies get his first start in 10 months. It was in a losing effort, and he was playing on the right instead of playing on the left, and asked to move inside, play a slightly different role for Vincent Kompany. But it was great to see. And I mean, that's what we hope as well for Bumbido, which is going to be hugely important for our back line. But Jimmy, I don't know if you got a chance to watch that game, but I mean, Alfonso Davies, we know his history with Canada, sometimes tries a little bit too hard, tries to do a little bit too much, but great to see regardless. And hopefully he gets included in that March roster.
Yeah. And look, it's great to see him back. I mean, that Bayern Munich side right now is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, obviously, yes, they had their first loss the other day of the season, but they're so fun to watch. And it's good to see Fonzie back, getting back into the team, getting his minutes back, his first team football. I mean, it was so difficult for him because just before their winter break, you know, he had, I think, 20 minutes, then he had like 30 minutes, and then they have a winter break. Then they set up a friendly for him, and then he ends up getting sick. So Ken couldn't play in the friendly, and then he was off for another couple of weeks. So it's been very, very difficult for him getting back into the swing of things now. But look, his goal now is to start in a Bayern Munich side. And, you know, I think 19 games, they've scored something like 74 goals. They're just absolutely killing the league. But yeah, I mean, for me, it's just him getting back in, starting matches, getting 90 minutes under his belt, and getting back into that rhythm, which we all want to see Fonzie doing, and eventually coming back into this national team. So hopefully he'll be in the squad in March, get back with his teammates, get integrated again and find his feet and make sure that he is in form when he comes back. time for the World Cup.
It's interesting because when you got a team that hadn't lost a game in the league and killing it everywhere, for him to come back and get an actual start. Like, there's a lot of managers that are like, you know, we're not going to make a lot of changes here. We're winning games. But he's rotating quite a bit in the squad. And Vincent Kompany, one of the best defenders you could possibly see in his heyday as a player, has a trust of Alphonso Davies and even playing him on the right-hand side, which is kind of an interesting situation for him. I guess they just figured they would pummel this team, but losing.
That was their first loss, right, in the league?
First season. It's crazy. They're so fun to watch, though. But, you know, here's the thing, too, with Fonzie. When you're playing in that Bayern Munich side, they're so dominant. They have so much possession. They control games, and they pin teams in. It's almost like throwing a blanket over there. You know, that final third, they just really press and control the match. And when people say, you know, Fonzie, is he left back? Right, but he doesn't defend as much as what he would do with the national team. Yeah. The national team, he's going to get tested more than what he would playing for Bayern Munich.
Yeah.
He really does. So, you know, is he a great 1v1 defender? A lot of times you don't even see it when he's playing in Bayern. They just have so much possession, so much control of the match. You know, when they're in possession, they fan out. You know, it's a difficult one. You know, where do you play him, left back or left midfield, knowing that with Canada, we're not going to have the possession. We're not going to be playing the way that Bayern Munich does, where, you know, your patterns of play can start slowly evolving during a match and you can drift into certain areas. Well, that's not going to be the same with Canada because that's not the way that we play.
Do you think, Jimmy, if Canada's in a pinch and we're looking strong on the left-hand side and the right-hand side, we're struggling with fitness, that there's a world where he plays on the right-hand side?
No, I can't see it happening. I think on that right-hand side, look, you've got Richie Larea that can play that on the right side. You got Seager who can play on the right-hand side. You got Alistair Johnson who can play over there. So I think we've got plenty of depth. I don't think there's any chance that he would end up playing on that right-hand side. Mm-hmm. Not at all. Unless he was playing left wing and then you crossed over the two wide players so that he can't come to the side and have a strike. But I would never see him as a right back. Never in a million years playing the position. I think we have too much depth in that position.
And I think that speaks to the embarrassment of riches that we do have at each position. Like, in what world, maybe even 6 months ago or a year ago, would Alistair Johnson have been the third player named at the right back position?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Jimmy, you mentioned...
I mean, there was no particular order.
Well, he wasn't top of mind. And I have full confidence in Alistair. But again, these are the question marks as you get closer and closer to the World Cup. Somebody who's been lights out for Canada, who's been trusted, who's been a nailed-on starter, might not be, right? If he doesn't regain full fitness. And because you have challengers, you have people who are trying to knock him out of that spot. And if Alistair is healthy and back, Nico Sigurd, does he move into the middle of the park? Because Jesse Marsh loves him in there. That's also an interesting piece of the puzzle. And do you maybe, we've talked about Kone slightly moving up, but we're going with three midfielders, right? And maybe depending on the opponent, maybe it's something that Jesse Marsh, if he's presented with that option, might decide to do that.
You know, if you're a player in limbo, word of the day, isn't the 23 player roster versus the 26 player roster a huge deal, right? Like, if you're a Kyle Larin and people are going, hey, who do we bring as our third, fourth positional player for that? All of a sudden you're written in if you're 26, but you're not so guaranteed at 23. That's a weird place to be, right on that edge.
Yeah, it is a little bit of purgatory, to use a slight synonym to limbo. Not necessarily religious, but I don't know. A World Cup can be a religious experience, as fans well know. But I think you look at those veterans, like a Junior Hoylett, like an Oso, like a Kyle Larin, there's only going to be so many roles available for those types of players. And then I think it'll depend on the health of these players who are coming back. because you have to provide more than one thing. You have to tick more than one box if you're going to be that utilitarian type player. But I think by all indications, it will be a 26 player roster, even though I don't know if I've seen that officially announced anywhere.
I was just trying to, I don't know if you noticed, I was on the interweb on my phone trying to look it up. Yeah, I was the cat. And I couldn't find it because it hasn't been announced yet. So still to be determined, TBD. Mm-hmm.
Anything from the Prem catch your eye this past weekend, Jimmy? I have no idea how your Forest did. I know that Liverpool lost at the death. God damn it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And Arsenal lost to Manchester United, who seemed to be able to score their way out of anything.
Yeah.
Nottingham Forest won, by the way, 2-0. Mm-hmm. Great result. On fire, battered the beast, great. Made some honey, and got out of there.
Is that what you do when you beat Brentford? You make honey, or do you knock down the nest and you run away?
Hive. You whip it.
You whip it.
Yeah.
But then I watched the Man United Arsenal. That was good. It's, you know what? It pains me to say, but it's good to see Man United have decent football at the moment. And Carrick coming in and changing. And the reason why I do like it is because he played for the club. He's a legend for Man United. Yeah. And he's got the opportunity. He's come in. He's changed things around. You can already see that the players are playing with more freedom right now. I mean, they beat Man City. They beat Arsenal now. And it's nice to see that he, as a Man United legend, kind of steering the ship in the right way. They're just playing completely different football than what they were doing before. And even at the end of the match, just watching all the players come together, smile on their faces, you know, celebrating with the fans. It was a great result for them. Really was. Yeah,
two massive results.
And what about that goal from Cunha?
Mm. Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
There were some great goals.
There was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that game, I mean, Arsenal dominated out of the top. And then Manchester United were, like, just getting pummeled as far as possession goes. They couldn't even get a grip. And then they grew into it. You know, Arsenal scored. I thought, I don't know, Man United is not going to – I can't see them getting back here. And then they seemed to grow into the game, and then they caused trouble. And then there was that bad mistake in the defensive area for Arsenal, let them back in. Good finish, 1-1. You know, and so Arsenal be kicking themselves. Obviously, the gap is only 4 points, I believe, now. And, so it's game on. So a little bit of pressure against Arsenal, who have struggled to pick up 3 points here in the last few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And booed by their fans, right? I think everybody's feeling the weight of that pressure to go out and win the Prem.
Oh, yeah. You see the faces in the crowd? Like, it was like just doom and gloom. And then they tied it up, and it was like, oh, we're going to win this. And then...
It's squeaky bum time for Arsenal.
Oh, my God. Everybody's wound so tight.
We're going to win the league. We're the best. Oh, yeah. Top of the table. Oh, yeah. Wait to the second half of the season. Then let's see, because that's when you guys shit your pants. Mm-hmm. And they're starting to do it now.
15 games left, I think. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
But Dubs, as a Liverpool fan, how much patience do you – like, they're already turning on Arne Slot, right, after last year's brilliant season. Mm-hmm. They're already turning on him. How much patience do not the fans, but we know the carousel of managers in the Prem. How much rope are they giving Arne Slot this season?
I think a lot.
Okay.
I think especially –
are you giving him a lot, as you as a fan?
Yeah, I think it's frustrating, especially after, you know, against all odds, Klopp's team, no players that are bought, and he basically takes that team and transforms them, and they go out and they win the league. Like, I think that's going to give you a fair amount of grace. But as we know, as we talk about on here frequently, like, I mean, that rope will run out, and it'll become rope to hang himself with. Right, like your analogies about rope go from positive very quickly to negative. But I mean, so many injuries, only like 2 days in between the Champions League match away at Marseille. So I mean, and also just like fitness of a lot of those players and a lot of those starters. I think he basically went with the same 11 and, you know, lose it in a cruel fashion, the long throw and a scramble gets it by Allison. So it hurts because I think they're winless in five in league play, but doing well in Champions League. So I think there are things that you can point to where there's a little bit of positivity that the fan base and even like the brass can cling to. But yeah, that patient will wear thin eventually if they're not able to get some results.
Well, you mentioned Champions League. Craig was on the dark web last week talking about the Prem teams doing so well in Champions League. Is this something that you're expecting, Craiger, or is it more, hey, it's nice to see?
Oh, no. I mean, I would generally expect it. I mean, we know that the Premier League is the Super League. They're the strongest league in the world, and they're proving it in the Champions League. I think they're all in the top 10 or tied for the top 10. So that's a lot, all six of them. Even Spurs.
I know.
Just shows you how difficult that league is.
Yeah.
Oh, and then actually linking Liverpool with Spurs. I think there were rumors about Andy Robertson.
There was. Yeah.
Going to Spurs. Mm-hmm. I don't want to see that. I love Bravo. No. Yeah. I will actually, last thing for the Prem before we wrap up here, just that match. I saw the highlights. I wasn't able to catch it. The one that United came out on top over league leaders, Arsenal. The cutting edge players that United seem to possess. Like, I think they have something like 12 or 13 guys on their team now, goal scorers, and a number of those who have more than three goals. So even if Arsenal dominate, even if they're playing an opponent who seem to be dictating the match to them, they can just flip a switch and in an instant find themselves back in the game. So to see them back, as Jimmy pointed out, like, I don't like it myself to see them back in Champions League spots, but it's good to see a player who's legendary kind of at the helm, even if it's in a caretaker fashion or role, sort of steady the ship and see them express themselves in a way that they can, because, you know, they have so much talent across the front and their ability to kind of change a match because they have players with outstanding class who can fill the net. So that's great. And it makes it exciting, even though I'd like to see Liverpool doing that more often.
Michael Carrick's given them some freedom too, and they've created chances, and to score three goals at Arsenal, that's a rare feat. Arsenal just don't concede that many goals, especially at home.
I do find it funny that all of a sudden people are like maybe cheering for United to get back into it so they can be hated. It's almost like be hated again, right? Instead of felt sorry for.
Yeah, build them up and then.
Yeah, just so you can trash them.
Yeah,
that villain role. I think they play it well. And have the trophy cabinet that's full and overflowing to prove it. But it goes back to our friend Carl Lang being on, and then people in the comments who will just defend Inter Miami to their death, right? I think you have the same type of fan base, maybe not quite so polarizing, who will defend those colors, defend that team. Because historically they've won. I think Inter Miami is just not on the same page, the same level, because the history isn't quite there. But there are people who are willing to come to their defense.
The money spending is, though. Mm-hmm. They like to spend their money.
Mm-hmm. They absolutely do. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that we wanted to chat?
Just promotion. You have we have some guests this week, but you tomorrow on Tuesday.
Yes.
Oh, so I was going to let
I'm
you
saying that. Yes. Yeah. Reen Wilkinson is going to join us, because the other big news that I haven't mentioned quite yet is that Canada Soccer announced Kennet Heiner-Muller as sporting director of national teams. So somebody who's been involved, coached, was an assistant coach under John Herdman when he was coaching the women. And then when John Herdman left the women's team to coach the men in 2018, he filled in, and the gold medal winning team for the women, coached by Bev Priestman, that was basically the team, the roster that Kennet had assembled. So lots to unpack there. Gave Rian some of her first coaching, head coaching opportunities. And Rian is a big fan and knows him very well. So Rian Wilkinson is going to come on tomorrow and tell us all about that appointment. And I'm sure we have tons of questions for her. And it should be noted that Kennet's wife, Enya is the head coach of
Sail away.
A-N-Y-A.
Oh, sorry.
Or J-A, I should say.
I feel like a massage now. I don't know what's going on.
I know. And then Jimmy earlier saying the hand talking, it made me instantly think of the Bee Gees jive talking, but hand talking. So, yeah, we've got...
Oh, and Sharms and I, just for February, Sharms and I have joined a fundraiser called the 2000 Push-Up...
And NJC.
I didn't know if you signed up yet.
I did.
But we are... So we're planning to do, throughout February, 2000 push-ups, which kind of comes out to be in about, they say, like from the 4th or 5th to the 27th, so 22 days. To do 2,000 push-ups. Sharms, JC, and Wonger, our challenge. We'd love for our pros to get in on it. Oops, I'm dropping shit. If you don't, but we want everyone to sign up. So if it's for the Canadian Mental Health Associations. So mental health is a big deal for us on this podcast and across Canada. We know with seasonal affective disorder, with all the things that happen in COVID, just there's a lot of different aspects to it. So we said, let's do some push-ups for mental health. So hence, we'll be sharing our progress. Jimmy actually said, you should film this because he's looking at us like he'll be laughing, just kind of like we challenged Sharms to do 50 push-ups back in the day on camera. And he did it, but he almost broke himself. He came out of it right afterwards, breathing really heavy, like he was going to have a coronary. So just that was the other promo. We'll keep reminding you. We're going to do some fundraising around that.
I would love to join you. It's a great cause, and I think it's fun. I love push-ups. Push-ups are already a big part of my fitness routine. Mm. But I just did the math on it, and that's 91 push-ups a day.
That's well, here's the thing. It's actually in the rules. It's not just push-ups. It can be squats. It can be sit-ups. Oh. Basically, it's something to push. But I love a good squat, so I might incorporate squats in between my push-ups.
Okay. I feel like your definition of that, you're like something to push. I mean, other things can be factored in as well.
Is that pumping as well? Does that count? Every thrust?
Nobody film that, please.
That would be six for like me. Six thrusts, and I'm done.
Yeah. Add that to the list.
Yeah, that's right. You're not
all happy. Cross that off. It's seven.
Mashing my potatoes.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. Add another seven onto that.
We're not raising any money.
Awesome. 993 left.
Oh my god. On that note, like and subscribe, and cheers for watching and listening.
Check us out on YouTube at youtube.com/footyprime and subscribe. Leave us some comments. We'd love to hear those. And check us out on Instagram at footyprimeig and on Twitter at footy_prime. And check out wearefootyprime.com. Sign up for our newsletter.
Only 84 to go.
Don't you move.
Poor Tony.
Don't you move. You stay there, I'll be back in an hour.
Tony, it's time to fill another pie.
You need spicy jerk. Oh my god, end recording.
Oh, good to finish on a laugh like that. I'm tearing up.